Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
And I'm Chef Daniel Orr.
The first harvest from the garden may still be a number of weeks away, but we're getting excited about it nonetheless.
People absolutely love fresh garden carrots. They're simply delicious and fresh out of the ground. Just can't be beat from a carrot that was sent from California.
That's Joseph Swain of Swainway Urban Farms. Along with tips and tricks for growing carrots, he talks about the numerous benefits of raised beds. We stop by a local seed company where they're selling seeds adapted specifically for the Midwest. And then our recipe is a dessert using flowers we picked right off the tree. But first, here's Mia Partlow with a look at this week's news.
House Republicans, led by Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, have proposed a budget that includes serious cuts to some food-related organizations. Some of the most drastic cuts in the entirety of the budget were leveled on the USDA, some $2.6 billion. For example, the Women, Infants, and Children program, which helps to get healthy food to low-income mothers and families, will see over $500 million in cuts. And it's likely farm subsidies will be reduced by $30 billion over the next 10 years. With budget negotiations still taking place, it's unclear how or if these cuts will end up going into effect. The Little Village Elementary Academy in Chicago was in the news quite a bit last week for requiring its students to eat the school lunch. That's right, students are not allowed to bring lunches from home. Even though the policy is getting national attention now, it was created 6 years ago and is in line with efforts by other schools to keep junk food out of the lunchroom. School officials say this policy encourages healthful eating habits, although we at Earth Eats haven't seen what's served to the kids for lunch to determine just how healthy the meals actually are. As you can imagine, some parents are up in arms, saying it infringes on their rights to decide what to feed their children and is an example of big government gone too far. And happy Earth Day, everybody! All week, our bloggers have been sharing some of their favorite green living tips, from recipes that reuse leftovers to posts for DIY compost bins to a list of ways to reduce your carbon footprint. Read the posts and join the conversation on our website, eartheats.org. For Earth Eats, I'm Mia Partlow.
Every garden starts with seeds. And for folks who are interested in local living, it only makes sense that you'd seek out seeds that were grown locally as well. Art Sherwood of Nature's Crossroads Seed Company is here to help. Sure, he wants to be your local seed man, but for him, it's really all about recruiting new gardeners.
So if you need to buy your seeds from Walmart, go to buy them from Walmart. Whatever. Don't let ideology get in the way of growing great plants in your backyard. Better than lawns.
Nature's Crossroads is a Bloomington, Indiana-based business that aims to have 70% of their seeds be local in 7 years. They're at 40% after 3 years, so they're right on track. Their seeds are adapted specifically for the growing conditions found in Zone 5.
Red winter kale. We have dwarf jewel nasturtium. This is a really cool one because you can eat those flowers. The purple plum, radish. Oh, radishes are good, too, and kids love radishes because they turn real fast and they start pretty early.
So what happens is Sherwood and his team take the strongest seeds from every harvest and plant those next season. As a result, the seeds produce hardier plants that give more food the following year.
For example, we have a Midwest adapted kale. First year we grew it, it was about a foot tall. Now, second year it's 2 feet tall, and we save the seeds again, and now it's goes up to 3 feet tall. I mean, you take the strongest seeds each year, and it quickly adapts to growing well here. What we try to do is you end up mimicking what happens in nature, because the tomato would fall off on the ground and it has to get this fungus on it in order for it to be able to actually get to the place where it'll grow. And so we allow it in this vat to kind of get those, it gets really kind of nasty and everything else. And then we clean it up and then we dry it. Then we run our germination tests and so on.
Speaking of tomatoes, they sell some 40 different varieties of tomato seeds, from pineapple tomato to orange Russian to perhaps the weirdest variety, cowtit. All those and their signature trusty tomato. Sherwood tells the story when he and fellow Nature's Crossroads founder Jeff Evard met the man behind the fruit.
There was a man named Mr. Trusty, and Jeff and I were out at the farm packing up and cleaning up some vegetables one day, and he's kind of wandered up to us and said, would you boys be interested in some seeds I've been growing that I got from my dad and he got from his dad and who knows how far back? And we said, sure. They turned out to be these fantastic, huge, you know, Indiana, just beauty tomatoes. And a few months later, he passed away. And so we had this gem, what we then called the trusty tomato.
It's a large, hearty fruit. They also have seeds for almost 40 varieties of greens, which he recommends for first-time gardeners.
So you might pick different kinds of lettuce, like here we have a black-seeded Simpson, or you might pick kales, which are relatively easy to grow as well. So we have like a red winter kale here, and the red Russian, which is really tasty. The lacinato is really awesome. And that stuff, if you let that go to seed actually in your garden, you'll get a fall crop too. It'll all pop up all over the place.
They use organic methods in growing their seeds, all natural pesticides and fertilizers, and no genetic modification. But being organic is more about caring for the earth and the watersheds.
Ultimately, if you buy seeds that are locally grown, you know that they're grown here and it's good for the environment because your carbon footprint's going to be less. You know that you're growing, getting them from somebody who's taking care of the earth where they're grown, because you can go there and see it, or you can ask me, call me up.
He's serious, too. Get Art Sherwood's contact info and read more about Nature's Crossroads Seed Company on our website, eartheats.org. Let's go to the garden now and get our hands dirty. Throughout the next few weeks, we'll be speaking with a number of farmers, both urban and rural, to see how they get everything started in the spring. First stop is at Swainway Urban Farm, just north of downtown Columbus, Ohio. This place specializes in growing a rare gem of summer farmers markets, fresh from the garden, carrots.
Hi, are you Joseph?
Yes.
Annie.
How are you?
Nice to meet you.
Joseph Swain manages a 1/3-acre backyard farm. The dozen or so raised beds take up the majority of the garden. Swain has a laundry list of reasons why building raised beds for your garden is so beneficial. First of all, you have control over the quality of the soil by adding amendments and compost and organic material directly to that specific growing area. Then some of the other perks.
You know, you get your soil depth higher, so you can plant a lot closer. With your plants, because they have room to actually grow down instead of, you know, hitting hard pan and wanting to spread their roots horizontally. And there again, it's a designated area that I don't walk on, so you don't have compaction of the roots. If you just have a square plot that you're meandering, you know, in between all your plants and such, you know, most times you're walking right on top of your roots that are, you know, trying to grow out as easily as they can through a loose soil. So, and like you see, I do have boxed in raised beds that I built out of 2x8 pine. A big reason for this is I grow 25% of my garden is dedicated to carrots. It's a high value crop. And so basically I filled them with a mixture of peat and perlite and green sand and added some kelp and some general fertilizer in there. Basically made a potting soil for these raised beds. So they have 6-8 inches of just lush environment before they start tapping in down into the clay. And a lot of people are unsuccessful at growing carrots simply because they don't have the proper soil depth to allow a root to grow down into, you know.
Even when you do get enough soil depth for the carrots, the initial process of making sure they survive their infancy is pretty intensive.
It literally takes 2 to 3 weeks to germinate. And so you have to be out here watering your beds, you know, every day, sometimes twice a day on hot days to keep that soil moist. Hardly any seed you have to do that for more than a week. Then you have to come out and thin them when they're at a young age. You're fighting with, you know, small weeds. You're trying to pick the weeds. Weeds are pulling the Gentile roots out of the ground. So for those difficult reasons, not a ton of people grow carrots. It's one of the more difficult things. So what that does is low supply at the market brings a higher value. If you only have one or two farmers at your market that are selling carrots, you can pull a pretty good penny because people love, and this is the key of it, people absolutely love fresh garden carrots. They're simply delicious, and fresh out of the ground just can't be beat from a carrot that was sent from California. So carrots, high value, a little more difficult to grow, but you know, the good things in life aren't easy. So
he hopes to be selling his first batch of carrots by the middle of June, and then since he'll be planting two new rows of carrots every 2 weeks, he should be well stocked for the rest of the summer market season. Listen again next week to hear how Joseph Swain preps his beds in no time at all using three simple tools with minimal elbow grease. While we wait for our carrots to grow, here's a recipe using food we foraged. Morel mushroom hunters see the blooming of the red bud trees as an indication that their coveted mushrooms are now in season. But these beautiful little pink flowers aren't just nice to look at. You can also eat red buds. They're a member of the legume family, right along with beans and peas. They have these little pods, and if you pick them when they're really young and tender, you can use them in stir fries. But today, it's time for dessert. This dish features red buds with yogurt, berries, and meringues.
So we have the red buds here, and I've just pulled them off the tree. It's best to do it kind of after you've had a nice rain, and they're nice and fresh and rinsed off. I've got prepared here some meringues, and if you don't know what a meringue is, it's basically just sugar and egg whites that have been beaten together until they're really light and fluffy. I've colored these a little bit with some green and pink colors for spring, and what we're going to do is use this one here, which is kind of like a flattened hockey puck looking thing, and we're just going to put some plain old yogurt in there, and what's going to happen is that yogurt will have, you know, that acid flavor that will combat that real sweetness of the meringue.
Now, the thing with meringues, I've heard, is they're a little tricky to make, especially if you're in humid weather. Is that correct?
They're not tricky to make. They're tricky to store. All right, so what you need to do if you make some homemade meringues is put them in a real airtight container so the moisture and humidity don't get into the meringue. I'm going to top this with some berries. I've got some blueberries and some blackberries. We're going to drizzle it with a little bit of Hunter's Farm honey. Okay, I'm just going to put a little bit of blueberry compote, but you could use some blueberry jam or whatever kind of berry sauce you want. A little more yogurt, and finish it up with some of those beautiful red buds, just kind of cascading down off the top of the meringue.
Let's taste this.
It looks beautiful.
That's Earth Eats senior producer, Adam Schweigert. He loaded his fork with a little bit of everything.
The flowers are like a little bit, almost actually bitter, sort of like astringent. So it kind of balances nicely with the other flavors, all the berries and the yogurt.
Adam, have you cooked with flowers?
Actually, no. I would be excited to do some more foraging and try some more stuff out, especially if I knew like which flowers were edible and what they taste like and that kind of stuff. So.
Well, let me give you a few suggestions then. The flowers from other legumes like beans and peas are sweet, and blue borage flowers have a cucumber taste to them. But for a more bitter, peppery taste, try eating decorative flowers like marigolds, peonies, carnations, and nasturtiums. Later in the summer, zucchini and squash blossoms appear, and we've got a great recipe for stuffed squash blossoms on our website. Print it off along with a recipe from this show at eartheats.org.
Support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli. Information at bloomingfoods.coop.
Production support also comes from goodsforcooks.com, online at goodsforcooks.com.
Earth Eats is a production of WFIU Public Media. Thanks for listening. I'm Chef Daniel Orr.
And I'm Annie Corrigan. See you next time.